Chapter 2. On the front, or esplanade, of Binglion-Sea stands the Hotel Superba, and at 4:20, the thin mist which had been hanging over the resort since lunchtime disappeared, and there filtered through the windows of suite number 7 on the second floor that curious faint gamboge light which passes for sunshine in England. Its mild rays shone deprecatingly on one of those many-coloured carpets peculiar to suites at South Coast hotels, on the engraving of the Staggart Bay over the mantelpiece, on the table set for tea, and on Marie, maid to Mrs. Higginbottom, who had just deposited on the table a plate of sandwiches. In addition to the sunshine, there entered also the strains of a dance band, presumably from the winter garden below, where Swiss waiters prowled among potted palms, and such of the Superba's guests as wished to do so were encouraged to dance. Carried away by the melody, Marie went so far as to dance a step or two herself. And so absorbed was she in this pursuit that a knocking on the outer door did not penetrate to her consciousness. It got through, however, to Mrs. Higginbottom in the bedroom, and she gave tongue. "Marie?" The maid ceased to pirouette. Her employer's voice was one of those which impress themselves on the most preoccupied. "Yes, madam?" "Are you deaf, you poor fish? Somebody at the door!" "Very good, madam." Marie opened the door. There was nothing much to reward her for the effort, merely a man in spats. "Mrs. Higginbottom in?" asked this individual. "Yes, sir." The visitor crossed the threshold. He was an immaculate and yet somehow subtly battered person in the early 30s. He wore a suit of grey material and unimpeachable cut, and, until he removed it, a white bowler hat. In his right eye there was a monocle, and through this he inspected the tea-table. With a slight diminution of what appeared to be a constitutional gloom, he moved towards it and picked up a sandwich. Mrs. Higginbottom, still a disembodied voice, continued to interest herself in the proceedings. "Is that you, Bill?" "It is not Mr. Bannister, madam. It is—" Marie looked at the feaster inquiringly. He was now well into his second sandwich, but he could still speak, and did so. "Lord Tidmouth." "Who the dickens is Lord Tidmouth?" The newcomer seemed to feel that he ought to enter into the spirit of this long-distance conversation. He approached the bedroom door. "What ho within there? Is that Lottie? Who are you?" "Tidmouth's the name at the present. It was Bixby till I hooked the old title. I don't know if you remember me. We used to be married once." Evidently, Mrs. Higginbottom possessed one of those highly trained memories from which no fact, however trivial, escapes. She uttered a pleased screech. "Squiffy! That's right. Well, I'm blowed. Where did you spring from?" "Oh, various parts. I've been travelling a lot. Not been in England for some years. I happened to blow down here and saw you going up in the lift, yesterday that was, and I asked your name and they told me you were staying here, so at the earliest opportunity, up I popped." "Splendid! I'll be out in a minute." "Right-ho. I say, when did you acquire the Higginbottom?" "About 2 years ago."
"Is he here?"
"No, Kensal Green Cemetery." "Oh well, see you soon." Lord Tidmouth wandered back to the table and started on another sandwich. "I shan't be long now," Mrs. Higginbottom assured him. "I'm just shaving."
"What?"
"My neck, you silly ass."
"Oh."
"Have a sandwich."
"I am."
"You're what?"
"A sandwich. I mean, I'm having one. And most extraordinarily good they are. Sardine, or my trained senses deceive me."
He tested this theory by taking another, and all doubts were removed. "Yes," he continued. "Absolutely sardine. Lottie?"
"Hello?"
"I read an interesting thing in the paper the other day," said Lord Tidmouth. "It appears that the sardine's worst enemy is the halibut, and I give you my word that until I read it I didn't know the sardine had an enemy. And I don't mind telling you that my opinion of the halibut has gone down considerably, very considerably. Fancy anything wanting to bully a sardine. I mean to say—" He would have proceeded further, but at this moment there was a flash of light in the doorway of the bedroom,
and he found himself blinking at one of the most vivid suits of pyjamas ever conceived by the diseased mind of a fashionable haberdasher. "Holy smoke!" he exclaimed. "I mean, well, well, well." "Well, well, well," said Lottie. "Well, well, well, well," said Lord Tidmouth. He took her hand in a sort of trance. He was visibly affected. The thought that he had been married to this and had allowed it to get away from him was evidently moving him powerfully. His monocle slipped from his eye and danced madly on the end of its string. "My gosh," he said. "Is that how you look?" "That's how." "Well, well, 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 well," said Lord Tidmouth. Lottie moved to the mirror and scrutinized herself in it. She was pleased that her very considerable beauty had won this striking tribute. "Sit down," she said. Lord Tidmouth sat down. "Tell me all," he said.
"All what?"
"All about yourself. Who was the recent Higginbottom?"
"Oh, a man. Very rich. From up north. I met him when I was in Follow the Girl. I went back to the stage after you and I parted brass rags. He passed on last July."
"Marry again?" "Ass! If I had, would my name still be Higginbottom?"
"Something in that," agreed his lordship.
"I mean, a girl doesn't call herself Higginbottom unless she has to."
"Absolutely not."
"Still, I am sort of engaged."
"Oh?"
"To a man named Bannister. Bill Bannister. Country squire sort of chap. Has a big place in Hampshire. Woolham Chersey, it's called."
"What?"
Lord Tidmouth's manner became almost animated. "Bill Bannister? One of my oldest pals. I'd like to see old Bill again."
"Well, you will, if you stick around. He's calling soon to take me to dance. Tell me about yourself."
"Oh, I've just been mooching round."
"Did you marry again?"
"Oh, yes, here and there. My second wife ran away with a Frenchman."
"Did you get a divorce?"
"Yes, and married again. My third wife ran away with a Spaniard."
"Too bad."
"When I married my fourth wife, who did she run away with?"
"A Brazilian."
"Your home during the last few years seems to have been a sort of meeting place of the nations."
"Yes."
"How many wives have you got now?"
"None at the moment. The supply's sort of petered out.
By the way, talking of wives, how do you feel on the subject of rocking horses?"
"What on earth are you talking about?"
"You see, tomorrow is my second wife's first son's third birthday, and I've just bought him a rocking horse."
"You still keep up with them, then?"
"Oh, a fellow has to be civil. Anyway, I've just bought this rocking horse, and I told the man to send it round here till my train went. You don't mind?"
"Of course not.
Thanks."
There was a pause. The jazz band below had now begun to play a waltz of a singularly glutinous nature. Its effect on the pair in the sitting room seemed to be to induce a certain sentimentality.
"Odd," said Lord Tidmouth.
"What's odd?"
"Meeting again like this after all these years."
"Yes."
There was another pause.
"Dancing much these days?" asked Lord Tidmouth.
"Quite a lot."
"Why not a spot now?
Music and everything."
"That's an idea."
They started to dance, and Lord Tidmouth's emotion appeared to deepen. He sighed once or twice.
"Good tune. Topping."
Into the rather fish-like eyes of Lord Tidmouth there had begun to creep a strange light, indicative of a brain at work. He was not a man who often thought, but he was thinking now. And what he was thinking was that, conditions having placed such an action within the sphere of practical politics, it would be silly not to kiss this girl. Here she was, he meant to say, within range, as it were, and, well, to put it in a nutshell, what? He kissed her. And as he did so, the door opened, and there appeared on the threshold a large young man in a flannel suit. His agreeable face, at the moment of his entry, had been wearing a rather preoccupied look. This, as he observed the entwined couple before him, changed to one of disapproval. He eyed them in silence for a space, then, in a cold voice, he said, "Good afternoon."
The effect of these words on the tender scene was immediate. It broke up like a bomb. Lord Tidmouth released his erstwhile helpmate and straightened his tie. Lottie bit her tongue. There was one of those embarrassing pauses. "I didn't hear you come in," said Lottie. "So I imagined," said Bill Bannister. Silence fell again. It was not one of those episodes about which there is much to be said. It impeded rather than inspired conversation. "Well, I'll go and get dressed," said Lottie. "I should," said Bill. Lord Tidmouth, during these exchanges, had been directing at his long-lost friend a look in which remorse and brotherly love were nicely blended. Remorse now faded, and brotherly love had the field to itself. Bill, turning to deal with this cuckoo in the nest, was surprised to observe him advancing with outstretched hand. "Bill, old man," said Lord Tidmouth emotionally. "Eh?" said Bill, at a loss. Lord Tidmouth sighed. "Have you really forgotten me, Bill?" he said sadly. "Your ancient pal? Well, well, well. Name of Tidmouth. Used to be Bixby." Bill stared. "It isn't Squiffy." "It is Squiffy." "For heaven's sake!" Complete amiability appeared to reign in young Mr. Bannister's bosom once more. He gripped the outstretched hand warmly. "Well, I'm dashed. Me too, old boy. I haven't seen you for years. I haven't seen you for years." They talked for a while of the dear old days, as friends reunited will do. "I hear you're still living at the old address, Bill," said Lord Tidmouth. "If I hadn't run into you like this, I was going to have dropped you a line." "Why not come down there for a bit?" said Bill hospitably. Lord Tidmouth looked doubtful. "Well, I'd love to, Bill, old man," he said. "But the fact is, been having domestic troubles of late, and all that. Left me a bit on the moody side. I'm more or less a broken man these days, and don't feel quite up to country house parties. It won't be a country house party, just you and me and my uncle." "Which uncle is that?" "I've only one. Sir Hugo Drake, the nerve specialist. I never met him. Nice chap?" "Oh, not so bad. He'd be all right if he could get it into his head that I'm a grown-up man and not still a kid in knickerbockers. He will fuss over me like a hen, and it drives me crazy. He has a fit every time I look at a girl. He'd die if he ever saw Lottie." Lord Tidmouth's manner betrayed a certain embarrassment. "I say, Bill, old man."
"Hello?"
Lord Tidmouth coughed.
"Touching on that little contretemps, if I may so express it, which occurred just now, I should like to offer a few simple, manly explanations."
"Oh, don't apologize."
"Carried away, don't you know? What with the music and the sardine sandwiches?" "That's all right." "Furthermore, Lottie and I used to be married once, and that forms a sort of bond, if you follow me."
Bill's eyebrows shot up.
"Married?"
"Absolutely married. Long time ago, of course, but somehow the taste still lingered. And when I found her supple form nestling in my arms..."
"Squiffy," said Bill earnestly, "kindly stop apologizing. Nothing could have been more fortunate. It gives me a decent excuse for getting out of an entanglement which has been getting on my nerves for weeks. Lottie's a good sort, but she's too... what's the word?
Jumpy?"
"Jumpy is right. When you were married to her, Squiffy, did she ever give you the devil?"
"Frequently."
"For no reason?"
"For no reason whatever."
Bill sighed.
"You know how it is, Squiffy."
"How what is, old boy?"
"Well, you meet a girl like Lottie, and she sweeps you off your feet. And then..." "Well, then you begin to think a bit."
"I see what you mean."
"Besides..."
Bill paused. He, like Squiffy a short while before, seemed embarrassed. He went to the table and drank cold tea.
"Squiffy."
"Hello?"
Bill mused for a moment.
"Squiffy..."
"Yes, old man?"
"Squiffy, have you ever felt a sort of strange emptiness in the heart? A sort of aching void of the soul?"
"Oh, rather."
"What do you do about it?"
"I generally take a couple of cocktails."
Bill shook his head.
"Cocktails aren't any good. Nothing's any good.
I've read books, gone in for sport, tried work. No use whatever.
What sort of work?
Stock farming. And what's the result? I have 1,000 pigs and my heart is empty.
What you want is a tonic.
No, I know what I want, Squiffy. I want love.
Lord Tidmouth, that expert, viewed his friend with concern.
Don't you believe it?
Love?
Listen, old boy, the amount of love I've had in the last few years, if placed end to end, would reach from London to Paris. And look at me. Besides, I thought you said you had decided to edge away from Lottie.
Lottie isn't the right girl for me.
A good sort, yes, but not the right girl for me.
Now, this other girl.
What other girl?
This girl I'm telling you about.
You haven't been telling me about any girl.
You haven't so much as mentioned a girl.
Do you mean to say? Bill nodded.
Yes, I found the real thing at last.
Lord Tidmouth was interested. He went to the table and with quivering fingers selected a sardine sandwich.
Who is she? He asked.
I don't know. I've only seen her out on the links. She's a poem, Squiffy. All health and fresh air and wholesomeness.
Ever spoken to her?
No, I haven't the nerve. She's so far above me.
Tall girl, eh?
Spiritually, you ass.
Oh, I see.
There was a pause.
I'm going to get to know her somehow, said Bill at length.
How?
I don't know, but I shall.
And then?
I shall marry her.
Lord Tidmouth breathed reflectively.
Shortly after my arrival in this room, he said, Lottie gave me to understand that you were practically engaged to marry her.
Yes, said Bill unhappily.
Then, obviously, what you want to do first, said Lord Tidmouth, is to get it well into Lottie's mind that it's all off.
I know, but how?
Well, it should be done tactfully.
Of course.
Gracefully, kindly, leaving no hard feelings, but nevertheless, quite definitely.
Yes.
Lord Tidmouth pondered.
Your best plan, old boy, he said, is to leave the whole thing to me. I understand women. I know exactly the right things to say. Leave the whole thing absolutely and entirely to me, contenting yourself with just murmuring the necessary responses.
Bill brightened.
You're sure you can manage it?
My dear old chap,
you'll be tactful.
Tactful as damn it. All my wives always raved about my tact. They legged it away from me like rabbits, one after the other, but they always admitted that in the matter of tact, I stood alone.
Well, I'm trusting you.
And so you may, old boy.
The bedroom door opened, and Lottie appeared, dressed for the dance.